Okay, so we'll pick up with the beginning of Perek Yud, Perek Yud Pasuk Aleph. Now it's interesting that for some reason I'm not sure exactly why it's here, but after Pasuk Dalet in Perek Yud, or I guess in the middle of Pasuk Dalet, the Ralbag
goes through many lessons that he learns and that he says we can learn from the whole story of Gideon.
So he goes through about 20 or so lessons about from the story of Gideon. So we're not going to go through all of them. We'll see how much time we have at the end, and maybe we'll go through Perek Yud, and then maybe we'll see at the end if we have some time. We'll discuss some of the lessons that the Ralbag points out. Okay, so again we're starting Perek Yud, Pasuk Aleph. Vayakom acharei Avimelech lehoshia es Yisrael. So after Avimelech, the one who arises to save Bnei Yisrael is Tola ben Pua. Tola ben Pua, that was his name. That was the name of the next Shofet after Avimelech. Ben Dodo, Ish Yisachar, he was from the Shevet Yisachar. We'll talk about the words Ben Dodo in a minute. V'hu Yoshev B'Shamir B'Har Ephraim. And he lived in this place called Shamir in Har Ephraim. It's interesting. There's a question in the Mefarshim here. Ben Dodo, so usually Dodo means his uncle, the son of his uncle, right? That's what you would assume.
Dodo is his name is Ben Dodo.
Okay, so you're reading the English.
No, I'm just reading the Hebrew. Tola Ben Pua Ben Dodo.
Yeah.
To me, it would be that he is the son of Pua, the son of Dodo.
And the fellow's name was Dodo. That was his name. Okay. So that's a machlokas. It's a machlokas where he showed him how to understand this pasuk.
Don't we also, is there something somewhere it says, if it says it like this, Tola ben mentions the father's name, and then...
And the grandfather?
Yeah. Like
then what?
Ben Yishai.
Right.
Yishai, an important person, right.
Yeah, I mean, usually it says it traces it back, you know, the Shvach or Lignai, it traces it back for good or for bad, you know, all the way. But be it as it may, there is a Machlokas Rishonim, Machlokas among the Mefarshim here, how to understand these words Ben Dodo. Some understand it like Joe, that it was the name of a person, right? His grandfather's name was Dodo. So it's Tola was his name, Pua was his father's name, and Dodo was his grandfather's name. Others say no, Dodo means his uncle, and Ben Dodo means he was the son of his uncle, which means he was his cousin. Some say he was Avimelech's first cousin. It's interesting, the Malbim rejects that. It's very nice proof. Why?
So the
Ishi Sachar, yeah. If they were cousins, yeah, what's the problem? So where was Avimelech from? Avimelech was a son of Gideon, right? And Gideon was from what Shevet? Menashe. Right? Gideon, we learned back, all the way back in Perek Vav, we learned that he was from, based on Rashi, we learned he was from Shevet Menashe. So the Malbim says that if Gideon was from Shevet Menashe, and now we're saying that he was Ben Dodo, which means he was his first cousin, right, the son of his uncle, so how could he be from Shevet Yisachar? Unless you say it was from his mother, it's possible. I think the Malbim is saying that Ben Dodo implies it's from the father's side. You know, but I guess you could argue that it was from the mother's side. But either way, that's machlokas. How to understand that? Now it's interesting that the question is, you know, did Avimelech accomplish something in the end? We know he died, and we know for most of the perek of last perek. You know, we were learning all these negative things about Avimelech, that he was like the thorns, he wasn't all that good, he didn't have much to offer. So was he a shofet? Was Avimelech, was he counted as one of the shoftim or not? Did he help Bnei Yisrael do tshuva? Did he not? He certainly led them, he was a leader, he was a general for a time. I mean, he didn't lead them to any major battles, but, you know, was he considered to be a shofet or not? So the Radak says that the pasuk implies Avimelech was a shofet, because what does it say? Vayakom acharei Avimelech lehoshia es Yisrael. That after Avimelech, a different person got up, assume the position to save Bnei Yisrael. It sounds like Avimelech also saved Bnei Yisrael, and now after Avimelech's death, somebody else comes along to save Bnei Yisrael, which is Tola. He's the next Shofet. So the Radak says, the Pasuk seems to imply that Avimelech was a Shofet. He did save Bnei Yisrael. And now comes this fellow Tola, who assumes the position of Shofet after Avimelech's passing. That's what he seems to imply. And he says also the wording of Vayasar that we had in the previous parak, that Avimelech was the officer over Bnei Yisrael, Vayasar. So he says that also implies that he was some sort of a leader, some sort of a shofet. Even though we learned last time, many understand Vayasar, it's a different language than it usually uses by the shoftim. It doesn't say that he was Vayosha, it doesn't say that he saved, or that he did. Vayasar is a different language. It means he went by force. Right? He took the reins by force, so to speak. And the Malbim disagrees with this, and the Malbim says that no. From the fact that it says Vayakom, Acharei Avimelech LaHoshia, that implies that Avimelech was not a Moshia. Avimelech was not a Shofet. So literally, it's a machlokas between the Radak and the Malbim, how to understand this Pasuk. Was Avimelech a Moshia or was he not? Was he a Shofet or was he not? Right? Did he accomplish anything? The Radak says he was a Shofet. He may not have been the best, but he was a Shofet. And the Malbim says absolutely not. Right? Here it says LaHoshia. That means that Avimelech was not a Moshia. But Dafka here. So that's what that's an interesting machlokas. Okay. Pasuk Beis, and this is pretty much all we have about this fellow named Tola ben Pua. So the Pasuk says, Vayishpot es Yisrael esrim v'shalosh. Okay. Esrim v'shalosh shana. Right? So he judged the Jewish people. He judged Klal Yisrael for 23 years. Vayamas vayikaver b'shamir. And he died. And he was buried in Shamir, which is this place in which he lived in Har Ephraim. That's where he lived. That's where he was buried. So he reigned for 23 years. So it wasn't a short time. Right? 23 years is a nice long time. But the psukim don't say anything else about him, about his lifetime, about the challenges. Nothing. That's it. He ruled for 23 years. He was the shofet, and that was it. Metzudas David points out that he actually died in the middle of the 23rd year. So he says that this year counted as the 23rd year of Tola ben Pua. And it also counts as the first year of the next Shofet. The next Shofet is Yair, as we'll learn about in a second. But it counts as the same. Pasuk Gimel, Vayakom Acharav Yair HaGiladi. So after him comes Yair HaGiladi. Yair HaGiladi is the one that assumes the position of leadership after Tola ben Pua. Vayishpot es Yisrael esrim ushtayim shana. And he's a shofet for 22 years, and also a nice long time, right? So Tola ben Pua was 23 years. Yair HaGiladi is 22 years. Interesting, the pasuk says, also very little about him, but one interesting tidbit here about Yair. Vayihilo shloshim banim, he had 30 sons, rochvim al shloshim ayorim, and they would ride on 30 ayorim. Ayorim are either donkeys or horses, different opinions, but basically a young donkey or a young horse. Colts. There you go. Different opinions. Ushloshim ayorim lohem, and they had 30 cities, right? They ruled over 30 cities. Here, ayorim, in this context, it's almost like a play on words in the pasuk, ayorim, ayorim. The first ayorim refers to the colts or the donkeys, the horses, and then the second ayarim refers to the cities. They had 30 cities. Lahem yikru chavos yair. They called them chavos yair. Those were the names of these cities. Ad hayom hazeh asher be'eretz hagilad. Until today, this is what they were called in Eretz Hagilad. Now, what's interesting about this? Well, the ayarim it seems to be a play on words, right?
30 yeah. They wrote on 30 donkeys.
Right.
They own 30 burros.
Right.
So what's
the purpose of all this?
Right.
Yeah, good. So the Radak says that the purpose of describing this is really just to show his prominence and wealth. That he had these 30 sons, the fact that they rode on these colts was a sign of prominence and wealth. The fact that that's right, The fact that they owned these cities was a sign of prominence and wealth. This was all a sign of his prominence and wealth. And the Radak says that's also why he was chosen to be the Shofet. Because he was a very prominent person, he was a very wealthy person. That's why he was chosen at this time to be the Shofet.
As opposed to taking the lead.
He was chosen, yes, he was chosen, right. No, Tola, it sounds like maybe he was also chosen. That's what it says. It sounds like he was also chosen, Tola.
Rabbi, it says that the status of a person was based on the type of animal that he rode.
Okay.
So in this case, he said he had a high status because he rode a donkey.
Right.
A donkey is...
I mean, you know, I'm not familiar with the different models of, you know... I'm not sure what the equivalent would be nowadays. I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know if a donkey was like a Nissan or a donkey was like a Lexus. I'm not sure, but you know, apparently it was a sign of wealth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's interesting. There's a whole discussion here in the Mefarshim because this pasuk should actually ring a bell. Why should this pasuk ring a bell? Because we have a description in the Torah, in Parshas Matos, in the Torah when Moshe is dividing up the land of Israel, right? So there's a discussion about Shevet Menashe, okay? What lands they conquer? And in the Torah, it says Ya'ir ben Menashe, right? This is Parshas Matos. Ya'ir the son of Menashe, Halach va'yilkod es chavosehem. He conquers these cities, va'yikra es hen chavos Ya'ir, and he calls them chavos Ya'ir. So we have a fellow, Ya'ir ben Menashe, mentioned in the Torah. He was one of the sons of Menashe. He conquered these cities and he named them Chavos Ya'ir. That's what it says in the Torah. So now we're reading a pasuk in Sefer Shoftim, which also refers to a Ya'ir HaGiladi, right? Ya'ir HaGiladi.
It's a different Ya'ir.
So hold on a second. And he and his sons own these cities, which they call Chavos Ya'ir. So it kind of reminds us of that pasuk. So, is he the same person? Is he a different person? So the Radak says, you can't really say he was the same person. Because if he was the same person, he would be over 300 years old. Right? So the Radak, that's what he said. So the Radak says, he can't really be the same person. So presumably, he said he's a different person. And once he's a different person, so then the Chavos Ya'ir that it mentions here are also not the same as the Chavos Ya'ir that we have in the Torah. So, you know, over there it's Ya'ir ben Menashe. Here it's Ya'ir Giladi. He has the same name. He named the cities the same name, Chavos Ya'ir, but it really wasn't the same thing. Now that just begs the question, well, why the similarity? Meaning, why did he name the cities Chavos Ya'ir? You know, was he doing it to mimic the Ya'ir ben Menashe? So the Metzudas David said that actually, yeah, he named them Chavos Ya'ir because of Menashe ben Yosef. He had the same name. His name was Menashe, right? He looked back in the Torah, Menashe ben Yosef, you knew, also conquered these cities, named them Chavos Ya'ir. So since he owned many cities, and his name was Menashe, I'm sorry, and his name was Ya'ir, so he said, I'll name them Chavos Ya'ir, just like Ya'ir ben Menashe did in the Torah. So the Metzudas David said he literally was just copying and mimicking the Ya'ir ben Menashe that we find in the Torah. The Malbim says that it was more than that. It was also to symbolize that just like the Ya'ir ben Menashe, who's mentioned in the Torah, was a mighty warrior, he was a gibor, because he conquered these cities and he named them Chavos Ya'ir. So too, this Menashe, this Ya'ir HaGiladi, was also a gibor. So it wasn't just, you know, from the Tzudas David, it sounds like it was just like almost like a cute thing. You know, I'm Ya'ir, and he was Ya'ir, and he had a lot of cities, and I have a lot of cities, so I'll name them Chavos Ya'ir just like he did. The Malbim says, no, there was more depth here. Right? He was sending a message. He was showing a symbolism. The symbolism was that I'm just like that Ya'ir. Just like that Ya'ir ben Menashe was a gibor, and he conquered these cities, and he named them after himself, Chavos Ya'ir. So too, I'm the same, and I'm also a gibor, and I named the cities the same way. The Malbim says, based on this, fascinating, the Malbim always picks up on the nuances in the Psukim. So he says that in the Torah, it says, Vayikra eshen Chavos Ya'ir. That's what the Pasuk in Matos says. Vayikra eshen. Here it says, Lohem Yikra'u. So says the Malbim, what's the difference when Tanakh will say Vayikra S or Vayikra Li? It's a little bit of a grammatical point, but he says there's a difference. You look at the Pesukim. Vayikra S, Vayikra Li. So he says, whenever the Pesukim say Vayikra S, that means that I'm giving it a proper name. So in the Torah, when it says Vayikra Eshen Chavos Ya'ir, this is what he named the cities. The cities were called Chavos Ya'ir. Here, when it says Lahem Yikru'u with a Lamed, Lahem Yikru'u, this is not the proper name of the cities. This is a nickname. The cities had some other name. But he called them, the nickname for these cities was Chavos Ya'ir. It was a nickname. And he said, that's whenever you see the Vayikra'u, the Lamed, Vayikra Lit, or Lahem Yikru, it's always a nickname, it's not the proper name of the city. It's almost like the five towns, right? Now, we call it the five towns. It doesn't say, that, you know, look on a map, it doesn't say the five towns anywhere, right? The five towns is not, it's not the proper name for this area. This is what people call it. It's a nickname for this area, right? So it's the same way, Chavos Ya'ir, according to the Malbim, wasn't the proper name of these cities, it was the nickname. And it was based on the real Chavos Ya'ir, which was from Ya'ir ben Menashe. So he nicknamed his cities, his area, based on that proper name of Chavos Ya'ir. That's what the Malbim suggests. But again, the symbolism is that just like he was a Gibor, I'm also a Gibor. Look what I've done, look what I've accomplished. So he was the Shofet following Tola ben Pua. We have this Ya'ir Agiladi. That's all we have. There's just this one little pasuk about him. And then again, pasuk hey, Vayamas Ya'ir, Vayikaver b'Kamo. The Ya'ir died, and he was buried in this place called Kamo. Okay, pasuk vav. And now we have the steady decline of Bnei Yisrael. After Gidon comes Avimelech. After Avimelech, we have these two Shoftim who ruled for 23 years and then 22 years. And now we have the decline of Bnei Yisrael. Pasuk vav, as we learned about the cycle of the Shoftim, right, when things are good, and then the Shofet dies, and they begin to sin again. Pasuk vav, ayosifu Bnei Yisrael la'asos hara b'nei Hashem. So Bnei Yisrael, once again, go and do evil in the eyes of Hashem. And what's that evil? Throughout Sefer Shoftim, avodah zarah, vayavdu es ha-be'olim. Now here what's interesting is that the Rashi points this out, that the Pasuk mentions seven different avodah zarahs that Bnei Yisrael were involved in. Be'olim, number one. Ve'es ha'ashtaros, number two. Ve'es Elohei Aram, number three. Ve'es Elohei Tzidon, number four. Ve'es Elohei Moav, number five. Ve'es Elohei Bnei Amon, number six. Ve'es Elohei Plishtim, number seven. Vayazvu es Hashem, ve'lo avadu. And they abandoned Hashem. They worship literally Bnei Yisrael, all sorts of avodah zarahs, right? Specific avodah zarahs for the nations, Plishtim, Amon, Moav, Tzidon, Aram, Ashtaros, Baalim, right? All these avodah zarahs they worshipped. And Chazal point out that the pasuk concludes Vayazvu es Hashem velo avaduhu, right? That they abandoned Hashem and they didn't serve Him. It's like a slap in the face. They didn't even serve Hashem with the other avodah zarahs. You know, it's one thing if you want to do shituf, you want to serve God and serve the avodah zarahs with Him, right? You know, like some claim some Jewish authorities claim that Christianity is a form of avodah zarah. Why? Because they believe in God, but they believe in other things, you know, other deities along with God, right? The sun, the whatever, right? All other deities along with God. That's their belief. So here, they didn't even do that, right? They didn't even believe in God with the other avodah zarahs. They totally abandoned Hashem, and they just believed in these avodah zarahs and just worshipped these seven avodah zarahs. And the Malbim says again, this only happens after the Shoftim die. Right? After the Shoftim die, they don't have the guidance, they don't have the leadership of the Shofet, boom. Bnei Yisrael, they go right back to avodah zarah. Pasuk Zayin. It's amazing, you know, you think about it today, you know, Chazal tell us, we lost the Yetzer Hara for avodah zarah. But you see how strong it was. Right? That literally, they needed, you know, this during this time period, they needed guidance, they needed leadership, hands-on, and as soon as there was a little bit of a vacuum of power, right, there was no leader, there was no guide for them, there was no shofet, boom, it was like an instantaneous recoil back into Avodah Zarah. You can imagine how strong that pull was, how strong the taiva and the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah was. Pasuk Zayin, Hashem gets upset. Vayichar af Hashem beYisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry at Klal Yisrael for abandoning him, for doing Avodah Zarah. Vayim kerem biyad plishtim uviyad b'nei Amon. And he literally, the wording is Vayim kerem, he sells them, but we've had this word before in Shoftim. It means that he gives them over into the hands of the plishtim and the b'nei Amon. And they terrorize b'nei Yisrael. Pasuk Ches, Vayir atzu, Vayirotzitzu. Right? They literally break them. The Mefarshim said this is, the language here is a language of breaking and crushing. They broke them and they crushed them. Es b'nei Yisrael b'ashana hahi, in that year, Shimona esrei shana. And then it lasted for 18 years. For 18 years. Right? Amon and Plishtim persecuted the Jewish people, crushed and broke the Jewish people. Es kol b'nei Yisrael asher be'ever hayardin be'eretz ha'emori asher ba'gilad. And the nation that suffered the most, the part of B'nai Yisrael that suffered the most, was B'nai Yisrael that lived in Eivor HaYarden. Who was that? Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh. They lived in Eivor HaYarden, in the land that was called the Gilad. Right? That's where they lived. And that was the Eretz HaEmori. That was the place where the Emorim lived. And that's the place that was the worst. Right? They were the worst. The Amon and the Plishtim really terrorized Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh that lived there. Now, it's a strange language the Torah uses. I'm sorry, the Navi uses. Bashana hahi shmona esrei shana. What does that mean? In that year, for 18 years. Either it was that year or it was 18 years. Right? How can you have both? What does that mean? In that year, for 18 years. So the Mefarshim touch on this, and they say that either that first year set the tone, right? Meaning that year they crushed them, and then the rest of the 18 years they persecuted them just like they had during that first year. So the first year was like the model year of how they terrorized the Jewish people, and then for the rest of the 18 years, for the next 18 years, I should say, they mimicked that what that first year.
Who's in charge
now? Nobody. There's no shofet.
Nobody's in charge.
Lack of shofet. That's what happens. Yep, there's no shofet, and boom, they go right back to Avodah Zarah. Right. This was right after Yair died. The Mitzudas David also points out, you see from the Psukim, this was not gradual. Sometimes you think the shofet dies, so gradually Amon and the Plishtim will start to make inroads, and persecute the Jewish people. They say it wasn't gradual. The language, Vayiratzu, Vayirotzu, they crushed them. It's like Yair dies, and it's almost like they were waiting. They were waiting in ambush, just waiting for, as long as Yair was around, I guess they couldn't do anything. He was the shofet, he was powerful, he would have, gotten the Jewish army together and beat them, right? But as soon as he dies, they're waiting for the leader to die. Boom, the leader dies, they're ready. They pounce, and they just smother, literally smother B'nai Yisrael at that time. And the Malbim says that this was an immediate punishment for the Avodah Zarah, right? They're doing Avodah Zarah, boom. Yair dies, they start to do Avodah Zarah, bang, right away. Right, Hashem comes at them with Amon and the Plishtim to punish them. Pasuk Tes. Vayavru b'nei Amon es hayardein, lihilochim gam b'Yehuda u'b'Binyamin u'b'Beis Ephraim, vateitzer li'Yisrael ma'od. So now, Amon doesn't just stop in Eivor HaYarden. Amon decides, hey, if I'm persecuting the Jewish people in Eivor HaYarden, let's persecute the Jews in the land of Israel also. So Amon crosses the Yarden, and they come to terrorize the Jewish people in the Shvatim, in the areas of Yehuda, Binyamin, Har Ephraim, the center, right towards the center of Eretz Yisrael. And it's bad. Vateitzer li Yisrael ma'od, right? B'nai Yisrael are really, really in a bad place. They're very much persecuted here. Pasuk Yud, they're suffering. Vayizaku b'nai Yisrael al Hashem le'mor. So now we have the cycle, right? B'nai Yisrael are suffering. B'nai Yisrael are persecuted. They cry out. Vayizaku b'nai Yisrael al Hashem le'mor. They cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, Chatanulach. So they recognize, they do vidui, right? Chatanulach, we sinned against you. V'chiyazavnu es elokeinu v'anavod es haba'olim. Says the Mesudas David, we committed a double sin, right? As we said, number one, we abandoned Hashem, and number two, we worshipped Avodah Zarah. Those are two sins, right? Because we could have worshipped Avodah Zarah and still kept worshipping Hashem at the same time, like we discussed with Shituf, worshipping them together. We didn't even do that. We abandoned Hashem, we turned our backs on Hashem, and then we worshipped Avodah Zarah. That was a double sin. Now, so he understands that the second half of the pasuk is a statement, right? Chatanu lach, we sinned, and again the statement continues, v'chiyazavnu es elokeinu v'anabros haba'olim, and we abandoned Hashem and we served the Balaam, right? We served the Balaam, the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. The Malbim turns his whole pasuk on its head, and the Malbim says, no, the end of the pasuk is not a statement. The end of the pasuk is a rhetorical question. Now listen to how the Malbim reads the pasuk. Vayizak bnei Yisrael Hashem limor chatanu lach, vay bnei Yisrael cry out to Hashem and they say we've sinned. But then they ask a rhetorical question. Even though we've sinned, v'chiyazavnu es elokeinu v'anavu res haba'olim, have we abandoned you completely when we serve the Ba'alim? We haven't. That's how the Malbim reads the pasuk. Yeah. It's a rhetorical question. B'tmiya.
Just the opposite.
The psukim before, because in pasuk vav, right at the end of pasuk vav, it says vayazvu es Hashem velo avaduhu. Right. Yeah.
How does the Malbim
right. So the Malbim says like this. The Malbim says, what does it mean here when they say v'chi azavnu? And the reason why he says this is because if you read the wording, v'chi azavnu sounds like it's a question. V'chi azavnu, right? Did we leave? Did we abandon Hashem? So says the Malbim, what do you mean? Did we abandon? Of course they abandoned Hashem. They're doing avodah zarah. So he says like this. What was their claim? Their claim was, God, you're right. Hashem, you're right. We were doing Avodah Zarah. Right? Chatan, we sinned. But why were we doing Avodah Zarah? We were doing Avodah Zarah as a way to get to you, as a conduit to worship Hashem. Right? That was their claim. Were we worshiping the Ba'alim? Right? Were we abandoning you by worshiping the Ba'alim? No. We were trying to get to you by worshiping the Ba'alim. We were trying to use the Avodah Zarah as a conduit to get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This was their claim. So they're saying we sinned. We shouldn't have been doing it. We admit. Right? It wasn't a good thing to do.
So like the Chet Egel.
Similar to the Chet Egel. Right? And in fact, you know, the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah mentioned that this is how Avodah Zarah began. The whole concept of worshiping Avodah Zarah began in the generation of Enosh. Right? How did it begin? It began, right, because think about it, right? They didn't have Avodah Zarah. They believed in God in the beginning. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, right? Adam believed in Hashem. Cain and Hevel believed in Hashem, right? Everybody believed in Hashem. So what happened? You know, how did things, you know, spin off that we ended up with Avraham, where Terach was at Ovid Avodah Zarah and they had idols? Had that happen? So the Rambam explains that in the door of Enosh, when you look through the generations, I forget which number it is, but in the generation of Enosh, what happened was that people started worshiping the sun, the moon, the stars, not as deities in their own right, but as servants of God. There's a God out there, there's Hashem. He created the sun, the moon, and the stars to, you know, to provide illumination and heat, etc. Right? So let's worship the sun, the moon, and the stars, who are the servants of Hashem. Right? We'll worship them as servants. We'll worship them as conduits to get to Hashem. But eventually what happens when you do that? Then you end up, after time, you end up beginning to worship just the sun, the moon, the stars in their own right. Not worshiping them as a means to Hashem. So says the Malbim, that's what they were claiming that they did. That was their tithe to Hashem. We sinned. We worshiped Avodah Zarah we shouldn't have. But it wasn't 100% bad. Right? We still didn't abandon you because we were still trying to get to you.
So what were the idols that you mentioned in the Tzukim before?
Yeah. Presumably, yeah.
Oh, so what's the stars and moon like
your... I mean, we don't know. I mean, the Baalim was not. The Baalim was I think, an idol. My Baal was I think, an idol. Ashtaros, you know, I think these were mostly idols. And then it just lists the gods of different nations. So whatever those gods were, it doesn't say what they were.
Just get rid of them and then say, well, back to you and then save us.
Well, that's what they're trying to do now. They're trying to do tshuva by saying, okay, we messed up. You know, we realized we shouldn't have done it. We should have just dived into you, just worship you, forget all the Avodah Zarah. Okay. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer Hashem al Bnei Yisrael. Hashem says to Bnei Yisrael, Halo mi Mitzrayim umin ha'emori, umin bnei Amon, umin plishtim. Okay, and Rashi says, what's Hashem doing now? Hashem is listing seven times that he saved Bnei Yisrael. And he's saying, listen, you worship those seven Avodah Zarahs? Well, I also have a seven for you. How about the seven times that I saved your skin? How about the seven times that I saved you, you know, from persecution and oppression and slavery? How about all those seven times? Right? So enough with your seven avodah zarahs. Think about the seven times that I saved you. What were the seven times? I saved you from Mitzrayim. I saved you from the Amori. I saved you from the Bnei Amon. I saved you from the Plishtim. We're up to four. Okay? Hold on. We'll talk about that in a second. Pasuk Yud Beis. I saved you Vitzidonim, number 5. Va'amalek, number 6. Umaon, number 7. Lochatsu Eschem, but they all pressured or persecuted, oppressed you. Vatitzaku Eli, and you cried out to me, Va'oshi Eschem Yada. And I saved you from their hands. Right? So I saved you from all these things. Excuse me, the Mepharshim say that Hashem is speaking to them through a Navi, an unnamed Navi. It doesn't say who it is. I don't know. It doesn't say who it is. Right? But it's some Navi.
Rabbi, according to the Maimonides, the people said that they did abandon Hashem, and Hashem accuses them of abandoning him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a different interpretation. Yeah. The Malbim understands it a little differently.
Right.
His interpretation is novel. His is not the simple understanding of the Pesukim. The simple understanding, that's what Harry pointed out, the simple understanding is that they abandoned Hashem. That's what we said in Pasuk Vav, and that's what we seem to be saying, you know, here in Pasuk Yud. But the Malbim just understands it as a rhetorical question. He's turned the whole thing on its head. You know, interesting. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Right. I'm not sure. I hear you. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure. And the Malbim points out here that, you know, the reason why it says these seven is because some of these were relatively recent. Now, Mitzrayim was a long time ago. That's where it starts, right? Mitzrayim and Amori, Amon, Plishtim. These were a long time ago, but now Sidonim, Amalek, and Ma'on, these were recently, right? These were more recent salvation. So Hashem is pointing out to them, you know, this is not just like past history. It's not just like an ancient Jewish history. I saved you. I just saved you guys from Amalek not too long ago. I saved you from Ma'on. I saved you from these people not too long ago, right? So, well, you know, you have a short-term memory here. You're forgetting about the fact that I saved you. The Malbim understands in Pasuk Yud Aleph that Amon and Plishtim is not referring to past salvations, the way that Rashi seems to imply, but it's saying that just like I saved you from Mitzrayim in the past, I could save you from Amon and the Plishtim now. Because Amon and Plishtim, remember, those are the nations that are now persecuting the Jewish people. So that's how he understands the Pasuk, that just like I saved you from Mitzrayim, I can also save you from Amon and the Plishtim, which are terrorizing you right now. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Ve'atem, Azavtem osi. Despite all of this, despite the seven times that I saved you, you abandoned me. And again, how we understand that abandonment. Is it a complete abandonment? Is it not? Vatavdu Elohim acherim. And you worshipped other gods. Lochein lo osif lehoshia eschem. I'm done, says Hashem. Right? I'm done. I'm not going to save you anymore. Okay? And according to the Malbim, he's saying, don't think you didn't abandon me. Meaning, even if you're worshipping, according to the Malbim's understanding, even if you're worshipping Avodah Zarah in order to get to me, as a conduit to get to me, that's still called abandoning me. And that makes it consistent with Pasuk Vav. Because according to the Malbim...
How can you make sense out of worshipping Avodah Zarah to get to Hashem?
It's a good question. That's a good question. And that's... You know...
Same question.
Right. So again, so, you know, they, you know, people needed sometimes, they wanted like a concrete, you know, it's, you know, listen... Hashem is a hard concept to wrap our heads around. You know what I mean? So we believe in Him, and we worship Him.
Destroyed
all the idols.
They killed each other.
Exactly.
Stone.
Right.
How can they save you?
We have an easy time understanding this, but in those days they didn't. You know, these people struggled. I mean, half the world was worshiping Avodah Zarah. You know, these people struggled with this.
People are.
Yeah. Pasuk Yudalid. So listen to what Hashem says. This is the great. In the Mitzvah Aseh, it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being sarcastic here. He's mocking them. Listen to this. So what does Hashem say? Oh, you know, you worship the Avodah Zarah. Fine. L'chu v'zaku el ha'elohim Hashem echartem bam. Right? So go talk to them. You want to get saved to Ramon and Plishtim? You're worshiping these Avodah Zarahs? Go talk to the statue and tell him to save you. Right? Why are you coming and crying to me? Okay? Heima yoshiu lachem e'is tzaraschem. Right? They'll save you. You know, you believe in them, they'll save you during your from your tzaros. Okay? So you should cry to them for help. That's, you know, that's how they understand. Pasuk Tezvav. Vayomru b'nei Yisrael al Hashem chatanu. So again, b'nei Yisrael, they understand. They take the patch. They understand the Musar, and they say to Hashem chatanu. They admit that they did something wrong. Asay atalonu kechol hatov be'enecha. This is an interesting pasuk. Asay atalonu. B'nei Yisrael are saying, we want you to punish us. You do whatever you feel is right. You do kechol hatov be'enecha. Right, whatever you feel is fitting. Achatzilenu na hayom azeh. So please save us. Save us from Amon and the Plishtim. Save us from these nations that are persecuting us and oppressing us. But they say, but we recognize that we sinned, and if you have to punish us, punish us. But what did B'nai Yisrael say? We would rather you punish us. Right? We'll take the patch from the Tata. Right? We'll take the patch from the father. But don't give us to someone else to punish us. Don't let Amon and the Plishtim punish us. You punish us. Right, like the pasuk that we say in Tachanun, and many of the several of the mafarshim right here point out this pasuk. What do we say? Vayomer David El God. This is how we begin Tachanun every day. Right, Vayomer David El God. Tzar li me'od. Right, I'm feeling oppressed and persecuted. Niplana b'yad Hashem. If I'm gonna fall, I'm gonna fall, but I want to fall into the hands of Hashem. Ki rabim rachamov, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a lot of mercy, so He might give me a patch. But in the end, he's gonna love me. He's gonna give me mercy, right? Uviyad adam alepola. But I don't want to fall into the hands of man, right? That's what we say every single day at Tachanun. This is what we say. And the Mefarshim say it's not based on it's a pasuk in Shmuel base, but it's the same idea as this pasuk in Shoftim, right? But they start crying out to Hashem. They say, okay, we get it. Chatanu, we did something wrong. We deserve to be punished, but you punish us. Right? We'll take the punishment from you. We don't want the punishment from the nations of the world who are going to oppress us and persecute us. That we don't want. Pasuk Tezayin, Vayasiru es Elohei HaNechar miKirbam. Very important. Right? So what do? They remove these idols from among them. They remove the idols. Vayavdu es Hashem, and they serve Hashem. Vatiktar nafsho ba'amol Yisrael. Okay, we'll come to that the end of that pasuk in a second. So what do? They remove the idols, right? Vayasiru. If you want to do tshuva, you want to do a full tshuva, you can't do tshuva and keep the getchka in the closet, right? You can't do tshuva and keep the idol in the closet and keep the idol in the attic. You got to get rid of it. You got to get it out of the house, right? A person is chote, a person that has a challenge with something, right? So what do? You got to get it out. You can't say, oh, you know, I'll try to do better, but I'll keep it in the house, right? No, you got to get it out of the house, right? A person's trying to... You know, your person's on a diet, right? So you're on a diet. You can't keep the cake, you know, right out on the counter if you're on the diet, right? You're on the diet, you got to get the cake out of the house. A person's trying to quit smoking, right? You can't keep a pack of cigarettes lying in front of your face. You got to get it out, right? So you're trying to quit Avodah Zarah here. That's what they're trying to quit. You got to get the idols out. You got to remove them. Okay? So they turn back to Hashem, Vayavdu es Hashem, they turn back to Hashem, Vatiktzar nafsho ba'amal Yisrael. Very interesting language. Vatiktzar nafsho, that the nefesh of Hashem was shortened, so to speak. Vatiktzar ba'amal Yisrael. So what does this mean? So many of the Mefarshim here point out that this is a little bit of a problematic language here. Why? Because Hashem doesn't have emotions. Vatiktzar nafsho ba'amal Yisrael almost sounds like that Hashem no longer wanted, He no longer had the desire to punish B'nai Yisrael because they did tshuva. They finally did tshuva. They got rid of the Elohei HaNechar. They came back to serving Him, right? So Hashem did, you know, no longer had the patience. He didn't want any longer to punish them. But Hashem doesn't have emotions. So the Rambam actually in Mor Nevuchim quotes this pasuk. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, that's his philosophical work. He quotes this pasuk because he has a whole discussion how whenever we find throughout Tanakh descriptions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's emotions or anger or that he sees something or he feels something, it's never literal because God doesn't have a body. He doesn't have a physical existence. Anytime we talk about the Yad Hashem or whatever, you know, there's no hand. Right? God doesn't have a hand. If we talk about Vayicharaf, like we just spoke about, Hashem got angry, Hashem doesn't get angry. Right, he doesn't have emotions the way that human beings do. Dibra Torah kelashon b'nei Adam, as many of the Mefarshim say here. But Tanakh describes God in a way that we could understand. Right, so Hashem's reaction was one that we would associate as anger. He didn't get angry because he doesn't have emotions, but just like we would get angry, that was, you know, that's how we can understand his reaction here. Batikzar Nafsho. So the Rama mentions this, and he says Nafsho. Whenever it says Nafsho, when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's Ritzono. It was his will. Batikzar Nafsho ba'amal Yisrael. He no longer willed, Hashem no longer willed B'nai Yisrael to be punished. He didn't want them any longer to be punished. That's how he understands it. They did tshuva, and once they did tshuva, there was no more need for them to be punished. Amal, it's also an interesting language. Amal, right? Amelut, or right, you know, la amol, is to work hard at something, you know, to work hard at something. So the Ralbag says here that it was almost like too much work kaviyachol for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to punish them anymore. Right? It was like too much work for him already to punish them because they had you know, and to keep saving them, you know, every time that they sinned. He said amal could also mean lies. He quotes another pasuk where amal means lie, or, you know, something that's false. So he said they were so involved in their amal, they were so involved in their avodah zarah, which is all falsehood and lies, that that he didn't want to save them. But many of the mafarshim, the malbim included, say no. Here it means, like in the Rambam also is saying this, it means he no longer wanted to punish them. He didn't want to punish them anymore. They did tshuva. Time to move on. Pasuk Yudzayin vayitzaku b'nei Amon vayachanu ba'gilad. Now here vayitzaku doesn't mean they screamed, but it means they gathered. The b'nei Amon gather. They gather by calling out. Vayeyasu b'nei Yisrael vayachanu b'mitzpah. So now Amon is gathering their troops together in this place called Gilad. Okay, Gilad was the city that Machir ben Menashe conquered. The son of Menashe conquered this place called Gilad. And that's where Amon is now gathering their troops. They want to capture Gilad now. Bnei Yisrael see this, and now they camp in Mitzpah. Right, they camp right across the way in Mitzpah. They get their army together because again they're a little bit energized because they just did tshuva and Hashem seemed to accept their tshuva, so they're energized. Amon sees this and they retreat. They see Bnei Yisrael gathering and they retreat backwards. Okay, which is a miracle here. Pasuk Yudches, Vayomru Ha'am Sarei Gilad Ish El Re'ehu. So now the nation, the men of Gilad, say one to another, Mi Ha'ish Asher Yachel Hilachem Bivnei Amon. We want to fight against Amon. They're running away, but we want to fight them. Who's going to lead us in battle? They have no shofet now. They have no leader. Who's going to lead us in battle? Yihiel Rosh L'chol Yoshvei Gilad. And whoever leads us in battle will end up being the leader of all of the inhabitants of Gilad. And the Mirtz Hashem will learn next week. Who is that? The beginning of Perek Yud Aleph. The Yiftach HaGiladi. One of the more famous Shoftim was Yiftach. Yiftach HaGiladi is the one that now takes charge and leads Bnei Yisrael as they fight against Amon. So we'll stop here for tonight. I'm Mirtz Hashem. Next week we will pick up with Yud Aleph, and again we'll figure out what to do with the end of Perek Tes.